Officially call the meeting to order, right?
At 5:32.
Cool. Yes. Wow. This is our early one, huh?
Yes.
We're normally like, oh. So it'll be called officially to order at 5:32. Miss Christie, do you want me to take it? I know we kind of tag team sometimes.
Well, the second item is approval of the January 16th, 2024 board agenda, which is tonight's agenda.
Move to approve.
All second.
Dixie.
Oh, we got four board members then, it looks like, huh?
Second is I'll send you information.
No.
I think it's Dixie. Oh, that's Dixie. Okay.
Dixie, and then I see Lily, right?
No, Lily's not there.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so that's Dixie. I'm sorry, my eyesight.
So we have Dixie, Carla, Christine.
Cool. Okay, cool. Thank you. So we have a first, we have a second. May I go for the roll call vote?
Sure. Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
And Christy.
Yes.
Okay, motion carries with three roll call votes. Thank you, board members.
Third item is public comment. We do not have anyone here in San Bernardino. Where am I supposed to ask you that?
There's nobody here in San Bernardino.
Is there anyone in El Centro?
No, there's no one here in the room.
No, and Denise is just chiming in on her phone.
Oh, great.
So four board members then. We do have quorum for sure then, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Hi, Doreen. It's Denise. I'm just barely joining. I'm sorry.
That is okay. Welcome. We're glad to have you. Thank you for joining on. Okay. Next up, I believe we have a presentation, and Mr. Kevin is here. I know you guys were saying hello when I jumped on. So, without further ado, I will turn it over to Kevin. And thank you, Kevin, for being able to do this for us again.
No problem. So I'm going to share my screen. So whoever's screen it is currently, I'm going to kick you off for a
Take
second,
over.
and you can take it back afterwards. Show that. Okay. Can everyone see the audit report?
Yes.
Yes.
Perfect. For any of you who have not gone through a presentation with me before on the audit report, what I typically do is I will go through the different sections of the audit report itself, kind of explain what their purpose is. I will talk about the financials a little bit more in the supplementary section. I know that that seems weird, but it'll make sense when we get there. And then when I'm all done, I open it up for questions. So the first place that we go to in the audit report is this very first letter, and this is the independent auditor's report letter. So this is the main one that gives the opinion over the financial statements. And this year we were able to continue with a unmodified, excuse me, unmodified audit opinion, which is the one that you want to have on your report. One of the things that we have this year that you'll see in the notes is this emphasis of matter paragraph. And that's because to everyone's happiness, the new lease standard finally kicked into effect this year for nonprofit organizations.
Right.
So before, leases were either operating leases, which means they were just expensed and you never saw them on the balance sheet, or they were capital leases and you had them as assets and a debt. Well, now that capital lease thing still exists. It's called finance leases. But the operating side also now gets attached to the balance sheet. The big thing is it's not a huge net effect because there's an asset and a corresponding liability. So the net effect is small, and it's due to timing on how the asset decreases versus how the liability decreases. But that went into effect this year. So it'll look a little bit different. So let's go there and I can show you exactly what I mean. So on the face of the financial statements is this new thing, right of use assets, operating leases, and leases payable. So that is the new thing that was added this year. And you'll see if you were to net these two, they'd be really close to this number here, which is why I was saying the net effect of this is not very big. So the balance sheet is, you know, your typical balance sheet shows your assets and your liabilities, and that's followed by the statement of activities, which shows the revenue and expenses. One schedule that was moved into the basic financial statements a couple years ago details out the expenses into their functional categories, and that's this next one, the statement of functional expenses. And that is finally followed by the statement of cash flows. And we do show it in both the direct and the indirect method. So that anyone familiar with financial statements, if you're familiar with one way over the other, you can see both here and they reconcile to one another. After the basic financial statements are the notes to the financial statements. And this is where, you know, you've heard it before, but I say it every time, like, if you have trouble sleeping, this is the section to print out on your nightstand. It's better than an Ambien. It's really, really exciting stuff. But it is important. And it serves two main purposes. The first is that it details out the fiscal and accounting policies that the schools operate under. But then also, for readers of the financial statements, the big thing that it does is it details out some of those numbers that are on that balance sheet. So with cash, you can see the breakdown of the different parts of cash. With accounts receivable, you can see what makes up that one number of accounts receivable into the various actual items from the federal government, from the state government. So it's kind of just, it's a helper to a reader of financial statements to kind of get a little bit more in depth on any questions that they might have. So even though they're boring, they are important. After the notes to the financial statements is the supplementary information. And a lot of these schedules are required through the state audit guide, like the organization structure, schedule of ADA, all that. These schedules right here are the breakout of the combined financial statements that you saw originally. So these, at the very beginning of the supplementary information. Was there a question?
Okay. I think it's just some voices in the background in the hallway.
Gotcha.
Sorry, so, right now we're just dismissing from the after school program and they're running through the hallway that's right next to the conference room.
And kids are so quiet, so I understand. So these financial statements are actually broken out by school. You can see in the column, there's an El Centro column and a San Bernardino column. And so instead of just having that one, you can actually see each school's numbers, both for the balance sheet and for the statement of activities and for the statement of functional expenses. So you can go here to actually drill down by school onto each of those individual numbers. Following those are the schedules I talked about a little bit with the organization structure, schedule of ADA, and once again, we show these by school, the schedule of instructional time, and then finally, the schedule of financial trends and analysis. And this is the schedule that I like to just take 30 seconds, a minute on to talk about fiscal health of organizations. Because this gives you a bird's eye view. It says what the revenue was for a fiscal year, what the expenditures were, if a school has debt, what their ADA was, which I think is a really important piece to look at when you're looking at fiscal health. Because if a school had a drastic decrease in ADA, you would expect to see some of those numbers go down, and then you would hope to see ADA go back up. Well, COVID, look at this. ADA went down, ADA is now starting to go back up. And so you saw that dip in revenue and you're seeing it go back up. And so some people would say, oh my gosh, 2022 was the worst ever. And then you would notice that it was still a positive change in net assets, which meant revenues were greater than the total number of expenditures. And so you always want to try to be positive. Sometimes you can't help it, because you still want to run the school. You're still thinking about the kids. So sometimes those expenses are just there, the expenses. But in 2023, they were able to go back up to a, you know, much healthier change in net assets in the 800,000. And so you just hope that that trend can continue. Now, one thing, I recognize a lot of the board names. So, you know, you've heard this before. But one thing that I do appreciate is Ballington has always had a very conservative budget process. I have some schools that if they even smell possible revenue, they will put it in their budget. But Ballington has always tried to be right near that balance line, which is good, because then if more money ends up coming in, you're prepared for it. So this number isn't big, and it's just a budget number, so you don't need to stress over that. And then San Bernardino, this is another one why I like to look at this schedule, because you can see such the big positive change that the school has undertaken with, you know, a lot of it is these one-time COVID funds, but what those one-time COVID funds did is they allowed some of these schools that had that decline in ADA to keep their feet underneath them so they didn't fall on their faces. And so the change in net assets was able to stay positive in, you know, 21. And you really, because if you remember in 2020, that's why the ending net assets is where it is. And so 2021, big positive change. 2022, big positive change. 2023, nice positive change. So that's what you want to see as someone who's looking at the trend, which is why it's called financial trends and analysis of a school. And then there's also a bump in ADA that's expected to happen this year. So hopefully that is being seen now that we're in January. Okay, so after, just in case anyone has questions on this, this is the reconciliation between this audit report and the unaudited actual report that's filed with the authorizer. And the only reason there's a difference here, and this doesn't mean that, you know, that it was wrong. What it means is any monies that are kept in the county treasury, at the end of the year, we make an adjustment for the fair market value of that. So some years, if the investments did really well, that's actually going to be a positive number. And some years, if the investments were down, it's a negative number. So just in case anyone was curious, that's what caused this overstatement of cash.
So what kind of investment do they have in the county fund, since there's this difference?
Well, the county treasury is limited in the types of investments that they can go for, but they're kind of, it's a wide variety that they can still do. But the biggest thing is investments in general were down. And so that's why the fair market value adjustment was down. Okay. Before the pandemic occurred, this fair market value adjustment that was happening on audit reports was a much larger positive number. And we hadn't been focusing on making the adjustment on charter schools for a little while. We were just doing on school districts. And CDE, even though they like to wash their hands of charter schools, during one of the audit guide meetings, they did say they wanted to see those adjustments in the audit report for every entity that had money at the end of the year in the county treasury. So we made it a focus the last 2 years to start making sure that charter schools were aware that that's an adjustment that needed to happen. And this year is actually really nice. A lot of the back offices actually started to make that change. Some of them who had clients who did UARs really early, like the El Centro UAR was done pretty early. And so it was before they did it before the change actually was happening. But this next year it's on the radar. So you probably won't see the same overstatement of cash here because it will be recognized in the UAR process. And hopefully County Treasury does great and it's a positive number. And, you know, people don't have to be mad at me for saying that we need to make a negative adjustment.
Thank you.
No problem. So after those are the independent auditor reports. And the first one is the report over the governmental auditing standards, followed by the state compliance report, which details out the different areas of the audit guide and if they were applicable to the audit or not. And those letters are then summarized on the schedule of auditor's results. So this first one, the type of audit report issued, that was that first letter that I talked about, unmodified. And then according to the GAS report, that first, that second report that I was just saying, we were able to say that there were no findings and no material noncompliance. And then in the state letter, we are also able to say it was unmodified audit opinion and there were no findings that were material or significant weaknesses. And then you can also see that listed here.
So wonderful.
Where it says none. And so with that, I open it up to any questions anyone has.
Can you go to page 7?
Page 7 as it is down here or page 7 of the PDF itself?
Your page 7.
This page 7?
Yes.
Okay.
Under the management fees, I saw 21-22 was 397, and all of a sudden it's like 725. That's a huge difference.
Yeah, a lot of these are just classifications. And so I can't really speak to why it's more in 1 year versus the other. Management fees include CSMC charges and any charges to anyone else doing management services. That's what goes into that area. So that covers IT, HR, personnel, and the accounting and all that sort of thing.
And IT would go up because of all the different programs we brought put in place in El Centro with the ACES and ELOP program and the different technology that we now have to also pay for.
Okay.
So to clarify then, it's not just management fees paid to Southwest. It also includes all of our back office as well as our IT, any type of quote unquote contracted services, correct?
Well, and some of the contracted services are also in professional consulting. But yes, that's like if it is classified as like anything that falls into that management services, then it'll line up with this. So IT services, personnel services, HR, the Southwest, and the other CSMC charges.
Right.
Okay. Thank you. So I can see on the statement of financial positions, I mean, there's a huge difference from prior year to this year, but that's because of the lease, the new lease pronouncement, right?
Well, I mean, I have a calculator.
I'm in page 5 to look at that. So, I mean, I can see most of it. It's because you have to include the facilities and equipment rental.
So these two numbers right here equal $3,358,311. And so the difference between this number right here, which is added this year, and this number right here, which was added this year, is only about $60,000. So that's what I was saying, is these numbers are large, but they net together. And so the difference that affected the financial statements was actually only about $60,000.
Yeah, I can see that.
It just made both sides bigger.
With that new lease pronouncement, I mean, if let's say we're gonna borrow some money from the bank for cash flow purposes, do they take that out when they do the calculations?
Well, they wouldn't necessarily take it out. It depends on what ratios they're looking at. But like I said, they cancel each other out almost entirely.
Okay.
And so it wouldn't have a large effect on any ratio. Because, I mean, if you're thinking $60,000 as a ratio of this $3.4 million is less than 2%. And so when you're looking at, you know, the change, you're looking at a less than 2% change.
Yeah, I mean,
it's just the numbers are big. Yes. And so that's why I like to, you know, kind of showcase it and mention it, because to somebody looking at it, they're like, oh my gosh, we added 4 million. Like, what? That's so much liabilities to add. But in actuality, it's, you're adding in almost just as much asset. And so it balances itself out.
Okay. Thank you. I really don't have any other questions. We got a clean opinion all the way through, so that's good. And great job with the financials.
Yeah, I like it.
Oh, well, another thing I like too is your new accounting guidance that you have, you know, what's in place right now and then later on what's coming up and stuff, so you can sort of follow what to look for.
That's good.
So anybody else have any questions to Kevin?
I don't, but thank you so much, Kevin. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right. Okay, board members. Whoops. Then if there are no additional questions, thank you, Kevin, so much for jumping on. We appreciate it.
Have a good rest of your meeting.
Appreciate it. Sounds
thank you.
Coming from you. Thank you.
Good to see you again, Kevin.
Good to see you all too.
Bye, Kevin.
Bye bye.
Okay. So then, board members, for our next part is we're going to go into the agenda action items. The first one is the acceptance of the independent audit that was just presented by Kevin or Mr. Scroll. Do I have a motion to accept the independent audit?
I'll make a motion to accept the independent audit as presented.
Thank you, Ms. I have a first. Is there a second?
Second.
Oh, sorry. That's okay. I have a first and second. Any discussion? Okay, hearing none, I will call for the roll call vote. Carla?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
Christy? And Denise? I think you said yes, Miss Christy. I think I
heard. Yes. Sorry, I didn't hear my name.
Like
yes.
Dixie.
Yeah. Sorry.
I Christy, saw yes. Nod. Yes. Yes, that's okay. And then Miss Denise?
Yes.
Motion carries with four roll call votes. If it's, yeah, I guess I would still say for roll call. I was overanalyzing that. Okay. Moving into the next section is the presentation of the minutes. I included the minutes from both our meeting back prior to holiday break back in December. It seems so long ago, as well as our closed door session minutes from January 11. And there was actually no agenda, no action items taken in those minutes. So if I could have a motion to approve the minutes.
Move to approve.
Carla, I have a first. Is there a second?
I'll second, Dixie.
Dixie, I have a first and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the roll call vote. Carla?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
And Denise? Yes. Hearing four roll call votes. Minutes, acceptance of the minutes passes. Moving forward, I know this is a long agenda tonight, board members, so I appreciate your patience. Next on the agenda is the acceptance of the November financials. I'll begin first with El Centro. Again, we are on a cash basis for revenue and I want to say true accrual system or for our expenses. Or actuals, I will say. So year to date for El Centro, we've received revenues is $1.3 million, which is about close to 17% over our current budget. And that had to do with a little bit of adjustments in ADA, as well as the peer pupil allocated amount. Their year to date expenses are about $1.7 million. So overall, they're doing about 32% better than their budget, and that's all driven by the increased revenue. If you take a look at, then they provide a graph for us, CSMC does. But if you take a look at the actual to budget summary, you can see they're spending slightly under budget for personnel. That will change because as we shared in the past, we were under contract negotiations with the union, and we anticipated the contract negotiations were going to occur this year. So we budgeted an estimated amount. So that will probably catch up once we approve the collective bargaining agreements. And then you can see they're just slightly over in books and supplies and services. But for the most part, overall, they're in a good financial position as of the end of November. The next just shows you cash over time. Unlike other years, not so much for El Centro, but you can see that this year has been a pretty strong cash basis. I think, Ms. Carlo, you alluded to a lot of times what we had happened in the past was we experienced some cash flow challenges while we were waiting for the state to pay, they didn't always time with all of our expenses. Therefore, we went and we got the line of credit, which thankfully we did not have to use this year yet.
Hooray.
Moving forward to, again, here's the balance sheet for El Centro. Transitioning it now into San Bernardino. Year-to-date revenues is about 7% over our current budget, and our year-to-date expenses are 8% under budget, so that's good. So managing definitely the expenses and the revenues, it looks like we're doing about 36% better than our current budget as far as net income goes. Moving forward, again, they do a nice, lovely graph for us. I think the financial reports have improved considerably over the last couple years. Again, actual to budget summary for San Bernardino. They're almost in line. They're underspending a little bit in books and supplies. They're underspending a little bit more in services. A very good financial position as of the end of November, and they're everything else looks very, very close. A little bit over in classified salaries, but I think that will adjust itself as the year continues. Again, their monthly cash. This I'm excited because unlike prior years, we have always or a little bit more challenged with San Bernardino being a smaller school with cash. So this year we look, you know, pretty steady. It was always this time we were always really close to managing. Probably around October, November, we started looking at cash very closely in San Bernardino. And this year, we're projected to be positive through the end of the year. So that's a good thing for San Bernardino. And then we have their balance sheet. Any questions on their financials?
So the net losses on both of them will be made up sometimes in November? No.
No, probably February.
Too late. When are they going to be made up? Because you said you're not going to touch the cash flow line of credit.
No, on the income statement, they will come more right-sided in February and March, because that's when the state provides the majority of their revenue. They catch up to us, right? Okay. February, March, yeah. April in there. So then that's when you begin to see it kind of right size. So the first half of the year, it always looks grim as far as because we always have to report cash revenue based on cash versus accrual. So if it was been on accrual, we probably wouldn't even see that net loss. But because it's done on cash, it's, okay. Yeah. And I know for years we tried to do the accrual thing. I think it's really challenging for schools to do that. So we had to dance through a lot of dances, Miss Carla. You know that with our back office.
Yeah.
So any additional questions on the financial statements?
Don't have any.
No, thank you.
Okay. Hearing none, then I will call for a vote of the acceptance of the November financials. Do I have a motion?
I'll move to approve or accept.
Christy? I have a first.
I'll second, Dixie.
See, I have a first and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll go for the roll call vote. Carla?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
And Denise?
Yes.
Motion carries with four roll call votes. Thank you. Okay. We're going to do the drum roll now, right? Our board. My goodness. Wow. So thank you, board members, for being willing to go through the process again and being willing to talk about it and also being willing to look at the responsibilities. We are presenting a proposed officer slate. Thank you for those who are willing to be able to have your name on it, even on the slate, right? Even prior to voting. So this is the proposed slate. Miss Christie, thank you.
It's know an honor to be nominated.
what like is this going on like the decade, I feel like, right? Once you get in the position, you never get to leave. It's like a Supreme Court justice, right?
Or the Pope.
Yeah, either one. Which one, right?
Lofty company.
Yeah. And then Miss Lily has graciously accepted to be nominated for vice chair. And then Miss Carla, gracefully for the treasurer/secretary. I took the executive quote-unquote decision and recommended that the treasurer and secretary still be combined into one role. So only because our little board is only a board of five. So hopefully that is okay. No.
They haven't been
trained. No. Okay. All right, sorry guys. Okay. So with that, we present to you the proposed officer slate for 2023 to 2024. Thank you, Ms. Carla, for working with me on this as well. I know you were championing our board members as well to take this role on. So thank you. So with that, do I have a motion to approve the proposed officer slate?
I will motion.
I make the motion. Ah, go ahead, Dixie.
Dixie, yeah. I'll motion to approve.
And then Denise, are you going to second? Can I?
I'll second.
Okay, we have a first and a second. Any discussion? Now, for now, now's the time, right?
Sounds good to me.
Okay. All right. Any discussion, board members?
Thank you. Okay.
Hearing none. Okay. So I'm going to go for the vote. Denise?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
Carla?
Yes.
And Miss Christie?
Yes.
Motion carries with four roll call votes. Congratulations, officers, again. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just, no, that was very cute.
Poor Miss Christie. I told her that. Please let us know if we can support you in any way, because I mean, this is like, I feel like you're growing old with us, you know, like decades.
Thanks, Tori. It feels that way to me too.
Yeah. Royal us story. Yes, I said with us. With us. I mean, I feel like it's been like years and years and years.
I've been that many years.
I've been there 12 years.
Yep, there you go, Miss Carla.
Yeah.
You're right. I feel
there
like
this is
a little bit of a hot seat, right? No one's gotten in that one yet. Wanting to, I don't know.
Well, I'm just amazed. Remember when my hair used to be jet black?
Yeah.
No, Bill, I don't.
Oh, that's no, right. I started going grade 16. Never mind.
Okay, next we're going to transition, then we'll go to a more, I guess, CDE thing. It's just the approval of the school accountability report card, board members. I didn't include the full SARC in your board packet. You are welcome to look at it online. Each of them is about 35 pages. That's why I did not include it. I don't want to say they say the same thing, but it is all driven by a state driven template. So it gets, you know, the demographic gets populated, school safety, academic. We get to talk a little bit about Ballington Academy. It asks for fiscal and expenditure data, talks about our curriculum. It is an annual thing. So the template is always, you know, every year. The principals have to go in and update this template. It can be quite wonky because it's a state type of thing. So again, every January we bring this to you, and so we're just asking you to approve or allow us to move forward with the submission of our SARC for both El Centro and San Bernardino. And if you have an opportunity to go online and look at, you will see. Like for every single school, it is the same exact. So it's just a matter of pulling together data on the schools.
Well, with we that, appreciate the recap.
just waiting for the board. Got it. Okay.
I love, right? So, do I have a motion to approve the SARC?
I'll make a motion to approve the SARC.
Second, Carla.
And Miss Carla's second?
Yes.
The first and the second, any discussion? Hearing none. Christy?
Yes.
Carla?
Yeah.
Dixie?
Yes.
And Denise?
Yes.
Motion carries with 4 roll call votes. Okay, great. Next on the agenda, board members, and I apologize. I should have probably brought this to you before. I feel like we should have talked to you about it before instead of asking you for an approval. And I regret that I waited to the last minute to do this. I tried to provide you with a high level analysis of kind of where we're at. It has to do with special education, and as you're familiar or we've talked about before, we have 2 different approaches for our Ballington San Bernardino School and our Ballington El Centro School. So our Ballington El Centro School is part of the Desert Mountain SELPA, and we have been, you know, for the last couple of years. Prior to that, we were part of the El Centro School District, but you know, very, very similar to how we were behaving now with our Desert Mountain SELPA. The El Centro School District pretty much said, you know, you're kind of on your own. We're going to give you your money. You hire your people and we're done. That was never the case in our San Bernardino ever since we were approved through our charter. San Bernardino said for special education purposes, we will keep your funding, but we will provide you with all the services. So that's where it's been at since the initial approval of the San Bernardino Charter back in 2016. Over the course, initially, we were like, this is great because, my goodness, in El Centro, you know, we've had to take on all the risk. Special education funding usually does not cover all of the services you have to provide, the knock on wood, the risks that you have might necessarily take on. So when San Bernardino School District said, we will provide you with all the services, we'll keep your funding, but we'll still provide you with all the services, we thought that it was a very positive event. Over the course of the last few years, though, we were finding more and more that we were almost at their mercy of the type of services that they would provide us, which is interesting because it's all driven by legal. So it was somewhat surprising, their approach. At the same time, services continue to get a little bit less quality. And we overall believe that students were suffering based on the services that we were receiving from them, at least as a charter school. And that is why we really looked into potentially working or transitioning out of their SELPA and moving into asking to be part of Desert Mountain. We've had a lot of experience with Desert Mountain, and they have just been phenomenal. I will share with you, they offer resources, training. We had a question on an IEP, and I will share because there are SELPA for El Centro. We had a question on an IEP, and the IEP was happening at 11 o'clock. I called them at 10 o'clock, and they were able to give me feedback, you know, a response, guidance, legal advice, etc., etc. So they're just phenomenally responsive, and their support has been tremendous. So that I tried to give you the high level talk of really this one page document that I have provided for you. Ultimately, at the bottom of it, we're asking that we have permission to submit an application to on behalf of Ballington San Bernardino to the current SELPA that El Centro is using. So, in fact, our both charters would be coming up under Desert Mountain SELPA for purposes of special education. And I listed really briefly for your review some of the pros and cons of that. Obviously, you know, special education funding is not a lot. We would be assuming that risk. At the same time, we would be able to provide you know, secure our own staff, much like we do in El Centro, and really overall increase the quality of services. if we were to move forward with Desert Mountain, then of course the special education funding would come to us. We would receive the funding, obviously, to provide the services. So that is why we are asking to submit an application. Ultimately, then both of our charter schools would be under the same SELPA if we were approved.
And I can personally vouch for the responsiveness to them as well. So I agree with Doreen with that. You know, I mean, you could call them any time and get the feedback that you need and the legal advice and, you know, and it really is a good relationship we've had with them over these years. So I appreciate that.
And if it's okay, I'd like to add that Desert Mountain SELPA is actually it's a charter SELPA. It's a SELPA that's designed for charter schools.
Right.
I have experience with Desert Mountain Charter SELPA as an administrator at my prior school and also as a parent with kids that are involved in the SELPA, and I can attest to their level of support. But I also want to let the board know that I have pretty extensive experience being at a school where we are with that SELPA, where I was responsible for the staffing and the execution and things like that, and I'm very comfortable with it as well.
So I know it says, you were saying one of the drawbacks was the risk increases, but it seems like if we're doing it at one school, that could comfort or at least buffer or.
I think so. And my take is, and Doreen might disagree with me on this. So Doreen, please tell me to stop if you think I'm wrong. But I think that we have lost a number of students. So that means they're basic ADA. Going to a district special day class.
Mm.
And having our own staff would mean we can provide that specialized academic instruction for a higher percentage of the day,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to sending them somewhere else.
Okay.
So we'll be able to retain those students. And this is the part I'm not 100% sure on, and Doreen will correct me if I'm wrong. Even though we might still have encroachment into the general fund, I don't believe it will be as much as the encroachment that the district takes right now.
How many special education students do we have?
In San Bernardino this year, we have 12.
We're about 75, 80.
We have that many in El Centro?
Oh, yes, we do.
Wow.
But I have to check with Mr. Reyes on that, but it's fairly high number.
Not English language, but special education.
Oh, SPED, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Really high. Whoops, I'm sorry.
I need to have a talk with El
Centro. No, I thought we were talking ELL or EL students. No, I'd have to talk to Ms. Wong for the actual numbers, but it's about 25 or so.
And Carla, to answer your question, we are waiting on the district on about 6 kids to be identified. And again, that goes to why we want to be able to handle the process ourselves, because we've been waiting on these kids since August.
Wow. And then you can't wait that long.
No, legally and morally.
Yeah, exactly. They have needs.
So that's where the expenses come, right? That's what really drives the expenses. It depends on the type of needs that your students need. For example, if we've been lucky, we knock on wood, I will share with you, if one student, we haven't had any students that required going to a non-public school, such as like residential, that's where the expense comes, right? If you have to have one of your students go to like a non-public school, because then that's the biggest risk and that's the most expensive risk on the charter school. Desert Mountain, though, they do have, contingency funding to support charters that might be in that situation. I will also share with you the other big risk is if, a family wants to take you to due process and they want to, based on, your belief of what the student should be receiving versus what, just many, many factors. That has happened to us, knock on wood, one time as well in El Centro. Yeah, Mr. Carlo knows. And Desert Mountain was phenomenal. We thought we were going to have to bring in our own legal support team. And they said, no, you're a member of the charter. That's all on us. So we were a little bit, I don't want to say skeptical, but you know, we wanted to make sure. So we, in fact, did consult as a school with another special education attorney, but that was just because we were trying to make sure everything was, you know, okay. But they sent the special education representative from their SELPA. They took over the, you know, process and provided what significant guidance, which we were really pleased with. So all my experience with Desert Mountain, knock on wood, their trainings, their availability of trainings, their opportunities have been phenomenal.
Another fringe benefit, it would be by no means a reason, but a fringe benefit is that I live very close to where their offices are located. So if, you know, if El Centro needs to be physically represented, or I have, or there's a in-person meeting, it's super easy for me to get there.
Well, it sounds like it's worth doing this, so.
Yeah, agreed.
So make a motion to approve to submit application to Desert Mountain SELPA for San Bernardino.
I'll second. This is Christy.
Okay, I have a first and a second. Any discussion?
I think we just had that discussion.
Any further discussion?
Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Carla?
Yes.
Christy?
Yes.
Dixie?
Yes.
And Denise? Yes. Motion carries with 4 roll call votes.
Thank you.
Now we got all of the business out, right? Well, the approvals anyway. We had spoke a little bit about the California school dashboard at one of our meetings, I believe, before we went on break, remember? So I had shared that we would bring it right back at one of the next board meetings. I think when we had talked, the reports were not official. They were still being embargoed. So that is why at this point I brought them back to you. I gave you a couple of items. There is so much information on this that, I mean, down to how they calculate the color and all these percentages, and primarily it's about, you know, growth and student achievement based on the student test scores. Now,
We want to move the needle. That's what we want.
Bring in the formulas and all of that, but absolutely, Mr. Anderson, you want to move the needle. Obviously, red is not good. Blue is good. So you hopefully, over the years, you want to get more towards the blue.
Green is good. Blue is exception. So let's go green first, okay?
So they have the enemy. Yeah, 11 measures of success, and obviously there's academic performance. 6 of them are state, the others are local indicators. You got academic performance, you got chronic absenteeism. College career readiness does not apply to us. High school graduation doesn't apply to us. And then suspension and English learner progress. So there's the colors we spoke about, the red, the orange, the yellow, the green, and the blue. Green is good, as Mr. Anderson said. Blue is exceptional. You want to kind of stay out of the red. And then it just measures kind of over year to year based on test scores. What I had provided you with was also getting a little bit about getting to know the state measures if you really want to delve deeper into what their meanings were, and then also how the colors were determined. And that's where I think I stopped. Like that was being really complicated and into their whole system. And then what I did do is I provided you with how we as a school compare to our authorizer. So I provided you with San Bernardino City Unified's scores, and you can see across their indicators where they're at. And then if you want to look and see where San Bernardino as a school is, and I'm going to hold, because I know Ms. Shannon would like to share with you the tremendous growth that they made this year.
It's true.
So Ms. Shannon, if you wanted to talk a little bit about, I know you were very excited you kind of talked about it when it was embargoed, but then we promised we would bring it back when it became public.
Yes. So, and I apologize, I didn't look at the board packet, but do we have San Bernardino and El Centro's kind of snapshot that we could go to?
Yeah, scroll down, please. They're there, you know, and really tremendous growth. San Bernardino, tremendous growth in El Centro as well. You know, I would like to, after looking at this data, and I've got a PowerPoint I can show you, I can share with you, you know, not now.
Keep going, please.
But, you know, I really believe I'd like the board to write a letter to all of our teachers regarding the data and the growth for both schools and congratulating them, because the teachers have really worked hard.
It's Bill's right. It's very true. They have. What you have in front of you is the district, our authorizing district. This is how they're doing. Chronic absenteeism is in the yellow. Suspension rate is in the orange. Suspension rate is a little tricky because that's the one, everything else you want the number to be high, but your suspension rate and your chronic absenteeism rate, you want it to be low. So that's a little tricky. So this one, what they don't show, with this one is the growth from the previous year. But just if we're looking at the colors, we did better than the district in English language arts, math, and suspension rate. For chronic absenteeism and English learner progress, we were about the same. And graduation rate doesn't apply to us. Could we scroll down one more, please?
You want to scroll all the way to San Bernardino?
Yes.
Sorry.
Okay. From Ted Ballington.
No, Ballington. San Bernardino. Did you demonstrate yours?
No, we haven't seen Ballington yet.
Oh, there it is. There it is, right there. Yeah.
So this doesn't have the growth either, but you can see our suspension rate is in the blue. Something interesting to see is we didn't have enough English learners
right.
in each grade level to generate a color. So the state kind of protects their confidentiality. If there's less than 10 testers, they won't generate a color. But what I can say for English learner English language learner progress, there's a percentage that we get of students who are making what is considered demonstrable progress. And the expected progress is between 35 and 40%. And for 2023, ours was at 79%. So even though it didn't generate a color, I'm exceptionally proud of our English learner project. And then the ones on the bottom where you see standards met, those are what are called local indicators. And I meet with staff and families and things like that to make sure we all agree that we do meet the requirements of those things. If we could go to the next page. So you can see we were only on... We only had 168 versus the district, who has like 23,000. A fairly high percentage of socioeconomically disadvantaged and 21% English learners. And then we could keep going. This is what I'm super excited about.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah, so 55-point growth in English language arts, 40 to almost 43 in math. And you can see that 79% of English learners are making progress.
That's wonderful.
And we're so excited. We are still struggling with chronic absenteeism. It's an ongoing issue. I think all elementary schools are facing it because TK, you know, in some kinders, the families just don't see right. some as a high need. So they're so little, they're only 4 years old. They don't need to go every day. So that impacts our chronic absenteeism rate. But I we're still celebrating this. And I think that the teaching industry as a whole does not have a whole lot of stock in the value of standardized testing. But what this does tell us is the measure that the state uses, the teachers are doing their job and the students are making progress. The students are learning and at a higher rate than maybe some of their peers throughout the city. So we're,
that's fantastic.
Yeah, congratulations. We're really, really pleased.
And the district, really? Yeah, they did not grow as much.
No, not at all.
So I just, yeah.
Turn and one of the things I mentioned, I articulated in the school accountability report card that you, thank you, Carla, that you approved a little bit ago. We do have a very small suspension rate. As a practice, we don't suspend students. You can see that's blue, it's 0.5. We suspended one student last year. So obviously, if it's a serious physical harm, somebody's in danger, something like that, we need to remove them from the situation. So we did it. Normally, suspension isn't going to work. You're not going to have somebody become a better student by making them not be a student for a few days. But we did have a situation last year where we had a student with high need who was hurting the teacher. And so, you know, we needed to make sure she was safe, he was safe, and the whole thing. So he was suspended. So that's why we got a 0.4%, which is still very, very, very low. But I really go for zero.
Always. Yeah, definitely.
And so, like I said, I'm just really, really happy.
Yeah, definitely. Unbelievable. Now, as far as we're going, you can see in El Centro, you know, they're, you know, yellow in absenteeism, they're orange in suspension rate, EL progress, and I'll give a little bit of the numbers too with the state, you know, so they're hitting their oranges. All right, keep going down a little bit. You know, again, they've got 5,000 students, not a whole heck of a lot. I was in a district with over 155. All right, so scroll down. Okay, well, wait. So again, you know, if you look at their EL scores, they're at orange. You know, they maintained a 1.4% growth in ELA. And I want to point that out too. And then as far as mathematics, they increased by 11.8. But then their EL progress declined. So you can see that they're maintaining an ELA, but really didn't show significant growth. And with mathematics, you know, they really, you know, they went up. And EL is still at the orange state. So you can get an overall idea that, you know, we're still looking at the concept of learning loss. And that's how I want to frame this. I want to frame this in the idea of, after the pandemic, we dropped down a significant amount. So this actually demonstrates our growth. And I think you know, both schools are showing that we have already combated the learning loss. And that's what I'm very proud of. You know, we've moved the needle forward in every area. So if you want to scroll down to Ballington now.
And Bill, while he's doing that, can I throw something out?
Yeah.
Board members, you might not be aware, the test that they measure English learner progress on is different than the standardized state test.
Whoa, what do we got here? What's going on?
It's a test called the LPAC.
LPAC, yeah.
The English Language Proficiency Assessment in California, I think it stands for.
Yeah.
And that's not quite as generic, I guess you'd call it, as the statewide test, and much of it is done one-on-one with the proctor. So it doesn't measure their academic skills so much as it does their understanding of the English language, speaking, reading, and writing.
Right.
So just so the board is aware, it's a different assessment system.
Right. And sometimes you've got children who are proficient in speaking, but they're not proficient in reading yet or writing, you know, so there's a balance that they score them with a one, a two, a three, or a four, and then it balances out from that. So they could come out proficient in speaking, but not in reading, and possibly a two in writing. So, you know, there are indicators there that are separate from this. So that's a good point. What's this calculator all about? What happened to my scores?
Keep going down.
Okay.
You got to go down to you. We're still on El Centro. There you are.
I can't see it on mine. I just see a standard calculator. It says standard, and it's like a calculator on mine. I don't know what came. Wait, maybe it's my thing. I don't know. What the heck happened?
Are you seeing Ballington Academy for Arts and Sciences board members?
Okay, now I am. Yeah, something popped up on my computer. Don't tell me what it was. All right, so again, when it comes to, and let me get my, I've got a little bit more drilled down data for mine. When it comes to chronic absenteeism, you can see we moved it to yellow, which is fantastic, but we actually made a 15% drop in truancy from the year before. And we're right now looking at a 20% drop from even then. So that's fantastic. Suspension is blue. We haven't suspended anybody since I got here. And when you talk about English learner progress, 50% were making progress. And my ELAC committee is looking at that. That's a good score, but we only made a 1.3% growth. The state maintained a negative 1.6. So the state went down, we went up. So that's a good thing. As far as English language arts, we increased by 20.1% points. So that's a significant thing where the state went down 1.4. So ELA, that's 20%. Again, that's a phenomenal growth. As far as math, we increased by 22.9. So 23% growth right there, moving our needle to orange, where the state just maintained a 2.6% growth. So, we have to look at that in comparison of that. So this to me is like phenomenal growth. We're only like 10 points below the state, I think, in either math or ELA, one of them. So we're 10 points. We can do that this year if we maintain and stay the course, but we demonstrated that we have in fact increased over 20% in both ELA and math, moving our needle to orange, up to yellow from orange. So that looks good. Scroll down a little bit more. All right, again, 238, 75, almost 76%, and almost 40% is EL students. We can keep down going down a little bit. All right, and if we stop, here we are, ELA increased 20 points, math, increased 22, and we maintained, EL progress with 50% making progress. So the, I've met with Mr. Reyes and we're working with our ELAC-DLAC committee to look at the possibility, because what we find is this year and last year, we actually had more newcomers come into the school, not just lower grades, but upper grades. So we've had fourth, fifth, and sixth grade kids coming into the school who are non-English speakers. So, I look at that as something that we now have to address when we're doing our LCAP plan. But tremendous growth, and we're real close. All right, scroll down. Okay, chronic absenteeism, we can see like 32%, but we declined 15%. And now we have a school to home. We looked at this last year and we had a learning loss grant. And, when you look at data like this, this is what informs your LCAP plan. When we meet, we say, okay, what does the data tell us? And this data last year told us that we needed somebody to really tackle the SAR procedure and really be a liaison to the parents regarding absenteeism. We're seeing phenomenal growth. Of course, there are pockets here and there. And now we're in flu season and kids are out. But it is, I'm looking at this as hopefully even going down, to maybe 15% next year. So that would be great. So, phenomenal growth, and we're real close. We're close to state, and that's where we want to be. Suspension rate always, zero percent. We haven't suspended anybody, knock on wood. And again, you can see the state, I think we're within that. The state is suspension in orange, and ELA, ELA orange, and math orange, and we look at that data as very positive trend because it's just moving forward. And if we stay the course, and what it tells us is our math curriculum and our ELA curriculum and the RTI program we're working on is working. So the piece we have to look at now is our ELA progress. and continue to work on our truism, because kids in school learn. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, we've got 33% of our population who are not proficient, and we've got 30% who are almost proficient. And of these, this 60-something percent, you know, truancy rate is high. So hopefully what we're doing will translate into higher scores next year. And there we are. Not bad, huh? And, you know, I met with my parent advisory committee to share this data. And I looked at also the SBAC testing. And, you know, to me, it's amazing, because I'm trying to get the word out that, you know, they're supposed to be able to access this data, but they don't. And, you know, some of the parents that I showed this data to, they wanted copies of the PowerPoint, because, like, they're saying, I got to share this because I got a friend of mine, like, or a relative who's in Calexico, and they refuse to take him to another school where, you know, the data says, bring them on by, you know, so I'm hoping to get the word out. That's where we are.
Board members, do you have any questions general about the dashboard, about any of our scores?
Well, glad to see all the improvements you principals are doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Actually, and teachers.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, but really, again, I kudos to the teachers and the work that they're doing. You know, I know, you know, they're tired, but they still crank it out, you know, so.
Congratulations to both of you and your team. I mean, even last year, I think they were experiencing still some of the impacts of COVID and, you know, changes and just a lot of stuff going on. And they were still very intentional, and definitely the it shows. So thank you. Right.
And they look at this data as very motivating. Like when they look at this, they're like, okay, we can do it. We can do it. You know, so that's fantastic.
And a caveat is, there is a word that, you know, as charters are, that the authorizers will be looking at our dashboards. It's beginning to be one more of those tools that they use when they evaluate whether or not they should renew you. Yes. So definitely this is really good positioning for us.
Yes, agreed.
And that additional scrutiny on the charters, right?
Yep.
All right. If there's no other questions on the dashboard, I'll hand it back over to you, Mr. Anderson, to do your principal report, and then Ms. Shannon, or I think
Ms. Shannon's is first, so she wants to
know. Yeah, I was just gonna say, I see yours is up first.
You put me on the wrong order here. My goodness. All right, I'll go over Ms. Shannon's.
I'm gonna err on the side of brevity because I know that it's a long meeting today. But I do want to let you all know that we started MAP today. I believe that we are doing our assessment a little bit later than Mr. Anderson is. And that was just something that the teaching staff decided, given our, you know, winter break and getting back to it, things like that. So we started today. But the reason I wanted to say that first is just after one day, the window is still open. We don't have any final numbers, but I was looking how fourth and fifth graders did today just on the, they did language today. And everybody in the fourth and fifth grade, everybody except one student met their goals.
Great.
So I was really happy with that today. So today was a good day, is what I'm trying to say. We're continuing the intervention program. It is working. We are seeing that growth. The informal assessments the teachers are doing in the classroom, the interventionist is doing, we are seeing the growth. The interventionist, three times a year, does something called DIBBLES, which is basic phonetic awareness and the knowledge of phonics. We're seeing tremendous growth there. So it's working. For the staff, this past meeting, we were kind of looking at some of the expectations we had at the beginning of the year and talking about what expectations are we meeting? What are we not meeting? What expectations might we have forgotten about? You know, because you go the ins and outs of every day. Oh, yeah, I was supposed to do that. So for our staff meeting, we created vision boards for the rest of the 23-24 school year. So vision boards for the next 6 months. And they had a pretty good time. I brought in like magazines and catalogs and things like that. And they created their own little teaching vision boards. I said, nothing about home, nothing about learning to knit, nothing like that. For teaching goals. And so they had a pretty good time with that. And it was
really good to see the teachers be able to specify some of the things they want to work on. And I saw things like engagement and rigor, positive reinforcement. So that was I'm really glad we did that for the staff meeting. The other thing we're really focusing on in the staff meeting is vertical alignment. And I think it's driving them crazy a little bit because it is tedious work. But as a staff, we agree every teacher needs to know what their kids need to know. So we're lining up the standards, especially in language arts, the standards are very spiral. So much of the language in first grade to third grade for language arts is similar. So one of their jobs is to kind of drill down and say, well, what's the difference between first grade, second grade, and third grade? What do my first grade kids need to know in June to be successful in second grade? What do my second grade kids need to know in June to be successful in third grade? So those are the discussions we've been having. And we're seeing it, you know, we're seeing it in practice and I'm seeing it in the lesson plans. We are also beginning training to administer the state interims. I don't believe that just saying to students or teachers, here's a test. We're not going to tell you what the interface looks like ahead of time. We're not going to tell you exactly what we're going to test on ahead of time. So the state allows us to do what's called interim testing to make sure the students are used to that interface and know what to do and how to use it. So we're starting that as well. One of the big things I'm excited about, I don't recall if I let the board know, but we had hired a performing arts teacher back in August, when we first started. And it was a little bit much for him. And so he resigned in September and I wasn't able to replace him until November. And I'm very excited because we now have a performing arts teacher that is also a counseling intern. And so this performing arts teacher can kind of do double duty, provide counseling services for individuals and groups and families, but at the same time, do the performing arts that our school population loves so much. So we're very, very excited about that. I want to make sure I'm not missing anything. Oh, coming up, MAP testing, of course, you know, we started that already. We are having a Black History event. We're doing it during school time. We're inviting parents. We're going to do things like trivia and word searches and things like that all over the school. We're having a STEAM night where at 5 o'clock in the evening, families can come in and we're going to have different activities throughout the classrooms, you know, like robotics and coding and things like that, different activities in different rooms that the families can do with their children. And in February, we're going to have the first annual fifth grade trip to science camp, and we're very excited. And that's pretty much what's happening in San Bernardino, unless there's any specific questions, of course.
Is the field trip a one day?
No, it's 5 days.
It's five, so overnight?
It's overnight.
Good luck. I bet on overnights with fifth graders and sixth graders. And
I have too. I'm not staying overnight because I need to be here. But it's only about 30 minutes away. Mm-hmm. So I might go up for a day trip a couple of times.
Definitely.
See them. But I've gone to fifth grade. I mean, I taught fifth grade for 9 years and 9 years, 8 years. It was a long time ago, but I went, you know, for a number of years, and it's life changing for these kids.
Yeah.
We have so many kids in the school who have never been to the mountains. They've never seen a lake. They've never seen the snow. They've heard about it.
That's amazing.
But they've never seen it. And we're going to be able to give that to them. And I am so excited for them.
Yeah.
When is that?
It is the week of February 12th.
That's great. We used to take our fifth graders up from the city, Chicago, up to Wisconsin to like it was a farm kind of thing with geology and everything. All the old retired teachers would teach classes. And, you know, it was like, I think a 3-day thing. And ghost stories, and they were amazed, you know, like, oh my gosh, you know, some of it never seen.
This particular camp is actually WASC accredited.
Mm-hmm.
All the different classes are taught by credentialed teachers.
Yes. So, wonderful.
Yeah, it's going to be a good trip.
Great. All right. Well, I'm going to be brief, okay?
Okay.
All right, so
we
finished our map data. So we've collected it. I put together a PowerPoint. We've shared it, and you know, the data tells us that we have demonstrated growth. You know, we compare using the map data, the summative report that shows where we are as far as hitting the norm. So I can say that most of our classes hit the norm and actually went above the norm. You know, and the projected proficiency rate. At this point, it's like 40%, which is very exciting, you know. So if we stay the course and do that. So we've looked at that data and, we're looking at RTI groupings and things like that from that, you know. And then for me right now, the LCAP plan has become my main focus or one of my main focuses as I work with people to get that together. We had a parent advisory committee January 10th. You know, we looked at the dashboard PowerPoint and reviewed that. SBAC comparison data was shared for purposes of a needs assessment. We reviewed the idea of the purpose of feedback and what kind of feedback we're looking for based on the data that we present. You know, it's not just, it needs to be targeted, feedback that we're looking for, you know. And then I've met with the chair of the DLAC committee. Planning meeting was had with the L teacher, and we're working on setting up a meeting with that committee probably in 2 weeks to look at the crosswalk standards, as well as then the data and what it's telling us, and hopefully search for some curriculum pieces that would address our newcoming, the children who are newcomers. So that's going to be the focus of that work. You know, also with him, I reviewed the SBAC data, and we created an agenda right now. And then also during this period of time, for the past, a couple of weeks or so, I can't even remember, we put together, or I put together a parent survey, student survey and teacher survey, focusing also with the CSMI work that we did. Well, I'm really grateful for them because, again, we were able to do a survey that actually hit the priorities of the LCFF, priorities of that. So we've got that in the mark and done. So we'll be giving that survey shortly to get input for the planning. As far as professional development, February 12th, we have a professional development day. And speaking with the staff, different ideas came out, different needs came out. And the TK through second grade team believed that they needed work with the Eureka Math program, a little bit more depth and knowledge of that. So I've established a PD with them. The focus is going to be understanding the major works of the K2 band as a story of units. So I'm really excited about that. And then the rest of the teachers, you know, we have a lot of new teachers coming on board, you know, and they really haven't had any work with project-based learning. So, you know, the expectation is that we're putting together the units right now. So I will be actually working with High Tech High, and I've hooked up with them, and we're going to have a professional development on project-based learning with them. And some of the topics I've discussed with the person who's going to give it has to do with guiding essential questions, real-world problems, process to product, and things of that. So I'm real excited about that because it's been a couple of years since the pandemic that, you know, some of my teachers have kind of like fallen away from that. We need to bring that back if that is something that we say we're going to do. So the expectation on the table right now is when we get to that February date, teachers will have fleshed out some kind of a unit, not to teach, you know, right now, if they can do it sometime later on in the year. So, you know, I'm working on with them on developing those lessons and units right now, meeting with teachers and, you know, real grateful. You know, we use the music and art grant to hire somebody who's doing industrial arts, but who is also a student studying at High Tech High to become a project-based learning teacher. So she has also become a resource for these teachers who will work with her, and several teachers are working with her now to have her and them work together in that class time as well. So it's kind of it's created a very interesting learning environment. You know, as far as new and different this year, you know, we have the addition of 7 new staff and 3 new programs, and they continue a new and interesting dynamic to the school, you know, because again, it's that idea of people I've worked with for 10 years, 11 years, people who, you know, we've had professional development, and me trying to now recognize that I need to also provide for their needs as new coming teachers that might not have the knowledge of Eureka Math, of guided reading, of project-based learning. So that catch up to also providing the professional developments for them And then also working with the teachers as teacher leaders, you know, the idea that what I'm trying to do is get my teachers to step up, because we have now more teams. We only have one grade that doesn't have a teammate, and that's second grade, but there are teammates. So there's a lot of team planning going on as well. And the addition of the industrial arts and the social emotional learning block has given them an additional planning time, which then ties into what we do with our professional learning communities, because the last thing we talked about was professional learning teams. And the work of the professional learning team is to work together to create common formative assessments. And that's a focus that I'm kind of hitting heavy on, because what are the formative assessments that you're developing, and what does the data tell you to inform your instruction? So that's the instructional piece that I'm working on with my staff in the meetings. So other than that, you know, we're just trying to hold it together. That's it. Any questions?
Thank you. Any questions, board members, for the principals and their focus?
Just keep up the good work. Thank you so much. Appreciate the reports too.
Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it.
All right, then I will move forward with next on the agenda is board application. So I was speaking, Carla, you and I had a discussion about probably we need one to recruit more board members because of our small team of five. We want to grow though, and maybe formalizing the process a little bit, and maybe to help formalize it, we could develop an application. So I created a draft application. I'm already seeing an error. As always, I pull from a bunch of different forms and put all of it into one, and I see that I missed a correction on one of the questions. But ultimately, I tried to kind of describe what we're looking for. I didn't want to get into too much detail about CEDC and then Ballington Academy, because essentially we're board members. You're board members for the overall arching nonprofit Community Education Development Corp, whose programs are Ballington Academies. I know a lot of our focus is on Ballington Academy. At the same time, I just always want to make sure that board members that are signing up recognize that there's that nonprofit involved as well. I tried to just summarize some of their responsibilities of board members, which is really serving as a trusted advisor to management, reviewing agendas, looking at all of our, budgets, audit reports, meeting all fiduciary responsibilities, helping recruit board members, and then ultimately directing us and the establishment of policies and a strategic direction. And then just to account to the public in a courteous manner. Candidate information, this is where I realized that I didn't correct one of them that I pulled in, and that's number of years or worked. And I can just say county versus Nassau County. I asked for the name, their address, their telephone. I asked them for any specific service that they might have had in the past, again, to help us get a feeling of their skills, their desires, their interests. I missed the MICUS Place board, so that could be interested in serving on our board. Which of your skills would you like to utilize on the board? That would help us, identify some more of their interests and maybe help us to also determine our gaps that we might have. I know a while back we talked a little bit about kind of the needs of the board. And I think at that point it was like an attorney. We wanted to look at someone who had real estate experience. So that might help us decide, if it's addressing some of our gaps. Then I just asked, if they agree that they could provide at least 2 hours a month, which I think our board meetings usually land around 2 to 3 hours. This was just presented as a draft, and I'm open to any, feedback. Again, just more very open-ended questions that at the end of it. So I'm definitely open for any of your feedback. If it's too long, if it didn't ask the right questions, I will of course go back and correct my errors and the ones that I didn't catch.
I didn't go through it in detail before the meeting, but I certainly will. And I'll provide some feedback, if any, to you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, I like the length of the application. It's not too long, but you ask some good questions, and of course, get some of the errors out there. Nassau and Micah, you said I think there was something else somewhere
that I missed.
I'll take a little closer look at it and email you.
Thank you. And Doreen, if I missed anything out too.
Doreen, I have a whole new cadre of TK and kinder parents, that showed up for meetings recently. And, for me, I'm looking at, would you mind if I reach out to some of them? Because I look at it like we need to farm the new parents coming in that are expressing interest in involvement in the school in the way that's connected to what the school is actually there for, the proficiency of students and everything. But I was really impressed by a lot of the, feedback and a lot of the comments that they had, and I look at a couple of those as, they might be candidates for the board. So would you mind if I reached out?
I don't mind. I would defer to the board. I'm more than welcome to meet with any potential candidates. If that works for the board, as well as maybe a board member could meet with me as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah.
It is definitely word of mouth, I feel like. Yeah. We always try to put in this formal process of, being nominated from the parent committee. And then it's just definitely an informal process.
Well, and that's why I sort of like this. It's not too long, and people can definitely do that if they're interested in it. So
I will make my changes as well as take into any edits that any of you have, and then maybe I'll bring it back to the next board meeting and we can kind of vote on the adoption of it.
Sure.
Sounds good. Okay, it's that time of year again. I'm going to be bothering you for your PC 700 forms, which are attached, and your conflict of interest forms. If you could have them back to me by March 1st, that would be helpful. Mr. Ledoux likes them. And I'll actually San Bernardino now, they like them by April 1st. So if I could just have them by March 1st, that gives us some time to put them all together and me to send them off.
We did this like 2 months ago.
I know.
It's been a year. It flies.
How I feel.
I know. I was feeling like when I was looking at, because I have I go by that board calendar to remind me what I need to put on the agenda as far as administrative items so that I won't forget. And I'm like, not that again. Oh my gosh. I feel like I was just hounding you guys all for them.
my goal, Doreen, is to do this in the first three times that you ask me. and I think that's ambitious. That's my goal.
I don't like doing it either. I know. We have to do it. We have to do it as well as management. And I'm like, oh man, not again. Jeez. Yeah. And then the next thing, board members, I just wanted to share, and this is information only. All of you have sat through our lengthy LCAP process, Local Control Accountability Plan, and our budget. And I know that we bring to you those meetings and we give you tons and tons of documents at those meetings and we ask for an approval. This year, we actually have done something different. We always ask for a consultant to help us, you know, guide us through, because there's so many details and just a lot of moving pieces. We decided actually to change consultants. And it has been, I think, principals will agree, a very positive experience and difference. The consultant provided us, and this is the last document that I provided you in this very long board packet this time, with just kind of a flow chart of planning. And they did it two different styles. So you can see really by month all the way up until June, what we'll be focused on doing. And it defines it by the consultant, by the LCAP team, and then by our finance team, which is honestly the principals, myself, and back office, our financial person. But you can just kind of see kind of what our focus will be on each month. And like, for example, January will be focused on, you know, survey distribution, and then gathering that information so that it can be weaved back into the LCAP. You can see what we'll be focused on in February. We're providing you with a mid-year update, which is very new this year. California Department of Education, prior to this year, we already only came to you with one LCAP, and that was the approval. Well, this time they have implemented another step in that process where we actually have to provide you with an update, and that will be done at our February 20 board meeting. You can see by May, because of San Bernardino's tight timeline, we'll begin to be drafting and pulling it all together for you. The second document is just a different way of kind of articulating what was said earlier, provides you with an overview, and then also a month-by-month play and who's involved in that. So that will kind of give you a overall picture of our planning as we move into this really actually busy time together, the LCAP and the budget. Any questions on that?
Actually, it looks a lot easier to oversee, you know, everything that you need to do.
Very organized. This consultant is very organized and definitely a much more positive experience with this consultant, I think.
She also comes from the place of being a charter school principal. So she's actually done this process as a principal that understands the ins and outs of it. So it's been really a helpful experience.
Good.
And that honestly moves us to board closing comments. We finally made it. I know it's been a long, long Someone asked me to put one more thing on, and I said, I can't do it this next month. Please. Mm-hmm. If it's not like required, it can't go on.
No mas.
As you can see. Any board closing comments?
Well, as usual, the principals and teachers have been doing good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. With that, I can officially call the board meeting adjourned to the public at 7:10, if that's okay.
Sounds good.
Thank you, board members. Thank you. I know it was a long one.
So, I think we have much to be grateful for. I was looking at San Bernardino Unified's minutes, and theirs go like 5-6 hours.
Oh, yeah.
They're there until midnight, 1 a.m.
Yeah.
And that's twice a month for them.
Yeah.
Well, and controversial, right?
I remember board
Unified.
I remember board meetings that would go to 1-2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, cantankerous, argumentative, you know, I mean, So, you know, this is a good time. But
not only it's short, it's pleasant.
Yeah. I know.
Well, you guys make it easy to have short, pleasant meetings. I mean,
you guys are doing a great job.
Thanks. It's good to see everyone. Thank you all so much.
All right, you guys have a good night. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Good
night,
everyone. Stay out there. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you for coming around.
I'm trying to be in sync with the scrolling.
Right.
Thank you, Daniel.
Oh, you're welcome. Did you catch that? I was like, oh, where are you? I don't know where you're at. But we got it.
We got it. Thank you.
You have a good night. Bye-bye.
Have a good evening. Much appreciated.
No worries. Bye-bye.
Bye.